Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello, and welcome back to our podcast at Get to Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about young offenders. I am joined by legal advocate Carla Riozzi. Carla conducts trials in the Magistrates Court and at the Crown Court, and she also attends to clients at the police station. Carla specialises in prisoners' rights, and she has been employed by the British Embassy in Bangkok, assisting British nationals detained across Thailand. Carla has won an award for her work and dedication to prisoners' rights. Carla, thank you so much for joining me again.
Hello, Hattie. It's nice to see you.
It's lovely to see you. I know our listeners can't see us, but I can see you. And I was just saying how fresh-faced and wonderful you look today.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you.
Right. Most unfortunately, statistics show that in the UK, youth crime is on the up, with the number of children in custody expected to double by 2024. The year up to March 21, over 15,000 children were cautioned or sentenced in England and Wales. And by young offenders, we mean children aged between just 10 years old to 17 years old. Young offenders are a big reality in our society, with 90% of child offenders being male, London having the fastest growing rate than the rest of England and Wales, and the reoffending rate is at its highest at around 35%. Further recent statistics show that the most common crime for those aged under 18 has been violence against another person, with drug offences and robbery becoming a greater issue. In this episode, Carla and I will be discussing at what age a child can get a criminal record, how long that can remain on your record, and the different types of records, what young offenders institutions are all about, the resources available to try and prevent reoffending, and much more in plain and simple English. Carla, let's start with the big question, because I think, and I tell you, the amount of people I've had this conversation with, and they've gone, are you being serious? Let's tell our listeners, at what age can a child get a criminal record?
Okay, Hattie, so that's a really easy question. It's 10 years old. It's very black and white.
Once I just find that...
reach 10 years old.
You say that, and I still feel astonished.
Because it's such a young age, and a 10-year-old still seems like a child, I assume.
Absolutely. And, you know, and in Scotland, it's 12 years old, I think, isn't it?
I think that's right, yeah. And the law has changed over the years. Years ago, it used to be between 10 and 14 years. You could be charged at 10 years old, but up until 14, there was a presumption that you didn't know the difference between right and wrong, and that would be another legal argument in court, as to whether the child did know the difference between right and wrong. But that has changed now when it's 10 years old. If you're 10 years old and potentially suspected of committing an offence, you can be charged and put before the court.
Do you know what? I would love to go along to some schools, any schools, and get all the parents, leave the children to one side, get all the parents into the school hall and say, how many parents know the age that a child can get a criminal record? And I bet my bottom dollar that the majority of parents do not know it's 10 years old in England and Wales and 12 years old in Scotland.
I'm still in shock.
You know.
It is, and it's as a professional when you're representing children of that age, whether it's at the police station or before the courts, especially a 10-year-old, they are a child. And sometimes, you know, it depends on the type of offence. Sometimes it's something innocent that's gone a bit too far. But equally, I've known 10-year-olds commit some quite serious offences. So.
And that must be so difficult, Carla, to represent a 10-year-old. Obviously, they've got their parent or guardian there. But, you know, I mean, I look at my 15-year-old and I think you're a child, you know, because 150 years ago, maybe children were sort of getting betrothed and stuff like that, you know, to get married and whatever. But we haven't lived in that era, really, obviously, and experienced that. And I still feel shocked by the fact that a child at the age of 10 can get a criminal record in England and Wales. And I guess that key point which you raised there is that child of that age, able to differentiate between right and wrong.
Yes, yeah, and that's a tricky one, because I do take your point. 10 years old is very young, and I think in the time certainly that I've grown up in, people are younger for longer. You know, they go to university now. When my grandfather was around, he was in work at 14, so he was a lot more mature than a 14-year-old today.
Yeah. Absolutely. And all of those, you know, all of that makes a difference. But I know that the lawmakers, let's say, you know, deliberate and look at a lot of things before decisions are made. And I've always said it, one size will never fit all.
No.
And we do try and make it fit all, don't we, with the justice system, because there has to be boundaries and rules and regulations and, but yes. I bet you've seen some very tricky situations where you think this 10-year-old or 11-year-old or 12-year-old couldn't, perhaps did realise something was wrong, but not to the degree where you think you are as guilty as charged. You knew that was absolutely bang out of order and you should have known better. I think that's where I get a bit stuck with it.
Yeah, and like I say, Hattie, it really depends on the crime as well. There are some where they're horrendous, and the child, whether they're 10, 11 or 12, they clearly did know the difference between right and wrong. But then equally, what I've dealt with in terms of a lot of young males is death by dangerous driving. So they get a bit, they want to get behind the wheel. Obviously, a car's quite a dangerous weapon in the wrong hands. And it could be something as innocent as they've got into a car, they are driving around, they could be messing around with their friends, for example, and they just don't see the danger. But, you know, they shouldn't be driving in the first place at that age. But it can lead to the death of another party, and that's life-changing, because that could be their friend that's died as a result of what's happened. They didn't see it as anything more than messing around, but actually they've committed a really serious offence that's also going to affect their life, because it will effectively result in them going into custody.
Well, this is it. I mean, it affects anything of that magnitude will affect, I think, somebody throughout their life and change their path and their course.
Yes.
And be there. And that's even before we look at the effects on somebody mentally having to deal with something like that emotionally and mentally. Yeah. But if charged with a crime, at what age does someone go to an adult prison? And, you know, this is what I thought was a really good question when it was put to me. If below the age to be sent to an adult prison and they're serving, when would a young person switch, and where do they go to serve a sentence?
Yeah, so that's one of those complicated questions.
Of course, it's the law, Carla. If it wasn't complicated, get legally speaking, wouldn't exist. My God.
First question, Hattie, because it's nice and straightforward.
Yes. One answer. Sorry, Carla.
No, so I'll try and make it as easy as possible. So technically, if someone's 18 at the time they're convicted, they could go to an adult prison. So I have many 18-year-olds that will go to adult prisons. However, up until the age of 21, they could be held in a young offenders institute. So, for example, if they committed a crime when they were, say, 16, they will be in a young offenders institute to start with. Once they turn 18, they could be transferred to an adult prison. However, technically, a young offenders institute could hold them until they're 21. At 21, if they're still serving the sentence, they would have to go to an adult prison at that time. So there is a little bit of discretion for governors there. For example, say, they've gone to a young offenders institute to start their sentence. They turn 18 and they're going to be released within 6 months. Sometimes it might not seem appropriate for them to spend the last 6 months in an adult prison.
And what about if they're 12? Where do they go at 10, 11 or 12?
Yeah, this is where it becomes a bit complicated. So hopefully I'll get this right, because it also changes for boys and girls. So between 10 and up to 12, they go to a secure children's home, and that will be for males and females. Once they turn 12 years old, they can go into secure residential units. They're called secure training centres. And at 14, males can go to young offenders institutions, whereas the females will stay at the secure training units until they're 17.
Good God. I mean, there is obviously a system there for children at different ages, because it's such an important part of, I mean, every part of our lives are important, but that development stage from 10 to 21 or even up to 18 is so crucial. Yeah.
It's very hard as well if you, say, for example, you find yourself in the system at 10 years old. As we said, you're still a child. To put someone into a young offenders institution or a prison at 21 or 18
imagine.
Or
21, I can't imagine.
You couldn't do that with, no. So you couldn't do that with a 10-year-old. And obviously they go to a secure children's home. Then they go on to the training centre at sort of 12 years old, which is slightly more different. But again, the law has taken account for, you know, at 10 years old, you are a child, aren't you, is the reality.
Of course you are.
Yes, you might have done something that needs to be taken out of society, and you might need to be put away and not have your liberty. But equally, I can't imagine a 10-year-old going into a prison. Prisons are daunting places at whatever age you go in, let alone a 10-year-old. So at least our system does reflect that to an extent.
Yes, no, indeed. Now, another big question, criminal records. Does a criminal record stay on somebody's record on their file for life? And now there's different files, and this is what we understand, isn't it? You've got the police records.
Yes.
You've got the DBS records.
Yes.
And goodness goes, whatever records you've got. So let's just answer. If you're 10 years old, from 10 to 17, you've got a criminal record. Does it stay on there for life?
Okay. So the reason I laugh is because, again, there's no straightforward answer to that question.
Because my understanding is it stays on your record for 100 years from the date of the conviction date on the police records.
Yes.
But it might be different for DBS.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And it also depends on whether it's a conviction or whether it's a reprimand or caution as well. So, yeah, it's quite a complicated area to understand. But
so if it's a criminal record and it's not a reprimand, but it is a straight up criminal record, you know, you were charged, etc.
Yeah.
Are we saying that on the police records, it does stay there for 100 years after the conviction date?
Yeah, so on the police records, it will remain there, and the police records have also got all sorts of information, so it won't just be confined to convictions, reprimands, cautions. It could be just information if you were under investigation or anywhere where your name sort of crops up. But that doesn't mean, because it's on the police records, that doesn't mean that, say, you were applying for a job, that information wouldn't go to your employer. That is solely there as the police records for their purposes and their information.
It's the DBS, isn't it? It's the DBS check.
Yeah, which tends to be more important, because when people are going back into the community, or if they remain in the community after they've received a reprimand, a caution or conviction, that's where it becomes important, and it could affect their lives if they were applying for a job. So with the DBS, even if you were to receive a conviction, depending on what age that was, and depending on the nature of the conviction, that sort of, there's a whole piece of legislation which says effectively when you no longer have to disclose your conviction or your reprimand or caution.
That's very interesting, Carla, because even, for example, on I was doing my home insurance renewal the other week, and it says, the questions are there, aren't they? Have you ever had a criminal record? And companies, banks ask this question.
Yeah.
I've seen it, but it just catches my attention more and more. The more I'm in this business, the more I see stuff that relates to legal stuff. And I think that's a big question, isn't it? Have you ever had a criminal record? Yeah. You go to get a mortgage. Have you ever had a criminal record? Some may say in the last 5 years, have you had any spent or unspent convictions?
Yeah. And I think that is what people, if you were in that situation, you need to look at. And it also depends on the nature of the job. And I'm sure you already know this, Hattie, that obviously there's some jobs which are so sensitive because you're going to be working with children, for example.
Safeguarding.
An enhanced check. So normally where those convictions are spent, for example, where it's enhanced, your employer might be entitled to more information, but you would be told that that check needs to be made. So the opportunity is there to make any disclosures. And then obviously, say, for example, it's an employer, they would look at something. So, you know, say you're in your 50s and something happened when you was in your early 20s, depending on the nature, if it's an enhanced check, they might say, yes, well, it's not relevant and we're okay about that. But the best way, I feel, is for people to be, if they're having an enhanced check, to be upfront. Yeah. But the reality is yes, things that happened many, many years ago can still come back to bite you in the future. Records.
Yeah. And that's even before we talk about social media, when things are reported online, how it just floats about online. I mean, we've got podcasts on how to try and get information removed that you don't want to appear online anymore. But there are several types of outcomes for children in court, isn't there? I mean, there's discharges, absolute discharge, fines, referral orders, youth rehabilitation centre, custodial sentences. And I found, I mean, discharge is when a person just gets released from court, no further action. I found the word, the term and the mean and the interpretation of absolute discharge quite interesting.
Okay.
And I thought, oh, it's when, and when the court decided not to impose a punishment because the experience of going to court was punishment enough.
Yeah.
And I thought that I wonder what percentage do you see a lot of that, Carla, in your line of work, where a court says you've done wrong. Okay. I don't know whether they would be so giving on a second or third time somebody turns up or the first time they say, this is whole experience of coming to court has been bad enough for you.
Yeah.
We're going to give you an absolute discharge.
To be honest, I don't see that much of that being used. I have seen it in my career, but rarely, and especially with young offenders, 9 times out of 10, it's pretty much standard that they will be put on a referral order. And that is effectively a referral to the youth offending team. So they'll have to check in with them and become known to the youth offending team. It's not actually that onerous, but generally that's what happens at court for a first offence, unless it's very serious.
Yes. I just found it interesting. I would have never thought that a court would do that, which I think is quite fair to say. If somebody really shows the remorse and you can see and you think, do you know what, this has been bad enough for that person, and the court believes the reoffending may not happen or they've really understood it this time. But one of the really important topics that people discuss around youth offenders is the assistance available to young people to get integrated back into society. For somebody who has served, say, 2 years, do you think there's sufficient assistance in place to ensure that young offenders do not reoffend, Carla? Because I have read some very conflicting stuff. I've read stuff that says it's really, the system is just not really designed to assist people well enough. I mean, when you look at the reoffending rate of 35%, I think that's quite high, personally. Yeah. But
My personal experience, and it's no criticism of anyone in youth offending team or the probation service, in theory, the support should be there and we have got a system in place. So if you're a young offender, whereas an adult offender would be on licence and they would be supported by the probation service, for a young offender, it's the youth offending team. Now, the provisions are there. And we do, in theory, have a great system in place and the support should be there. However, the problem is, and I actually feel really sorry for the youth offending team and probation service and
resources.
Everything has been
that magical word.
Yeah. Cut back so much. Probation officers and youth offending officers, they go into it for the right reasons. They do want to help. But they are being asked to manage a crazy amount of caseloads. Yeah. They're also being asked to be effectively a second police force now in terms of recalling offenders. So they're spending more time on the monitoring rather than the helping and reintegration. And with the high caseloads, it's not that they are not good people. And it's not that they don't want to help, and it's not that those provisions there don't exist. It's just there's not enough resources. So they can't do everything that they're meant to be doing, and they have to do what they can do, or the job to the best of their ability, but in the circumstances. And it's really quite, it's sad, really. And I know as a member of the public, a lot of people are just saying, oh, well, that person should have offended and you get what you deserve, which is one way of looking at it. However, I guess I also see it is that we do need to take an interest, and actually we do want these people to not re-offend and get caught up in the system, simply because it helps us all as members of the public if these people become pro-social, they get jobs and they go on to contribute to society. It's not going to help
we
them.
Have an obligation. We have an obligation. The system has an obligation as well to say, right, we have put all the resources we can that are sufficient.
Yeah.
Because as it goes, that's old age saying, you know, half baked. The resources should be there, because if you look at what the, and if they only purely look at it from a commercial point of view, and I'm talking about government here, 35% of reoffending rate. Well, what does that cost the system?
Exactly.
And for argument's sake, if it costs the system £1 million, which I'm sure it costs a lot more than that,
yeah,
then putting in £800,000 into the process of assisting people to integrate back into society, particularly when they have been young and they've gone into that, into the system at such a young age, surely has to be sensible to do. And, and I really appreciate, you know, what you're saying there, Carla, because it's not that the people doing the job don't want to do the job, because I think it's one of those jobs, a bit like a nurse, a doctor, a teacher. You go into it because you have a passion for it. I don't think you just fall into the line of being any of those professions.
No.
And this is such a specialist area of work, which is, you know, has everything to do with assisting and helping, that surely the government has to really sit down and think about, why don't we have the resources commercially? Is the reoffending rate, whatever that is, you've got to put at least that much back into it. And you've got to think, well, even if it is £1 million, the cost of the 35% of reoffending, if we put 5 million in and reduce that to 20% reoffending, then that's another way. But are there groups that champion to try and get more resources into this area of life? Does that even exist? Are you aware of any?
Yeah, definitely. I think you've got they're called the Youth Justice Centre. There's there's definitely more organisations. And I'm sure the Youth Offending Team, they relay back to the government through the appropriate people. But everything, I find, unfortunately, with government, everything is about money now, cuts now, how much we're saving now. It's not a long-term view, which I think you're explaining.
Which is what I was mentioning,
They never look long-term, because exactly what you've said, if you spend the money now, you'll be saving that in the future because you're getting people.
It's a bit like getting double glazing, isn't it? It's a bit like getting double glazing in your house. If you've not got double glazing, you think, well, it costs too much to do that. Your gas bills and electricity bills, heating bills are through the roof. Well, the cost of that double glazing will pay itself off, or an efficient boiler. And I say that because I've had so many conversations about that with certain members of my family who I won't name. But I totally get it. Well, look, if the government ever want to tap on our doors to do a job on that, then we'll certainly take a look, because I'm up for it, Carla, if you are. It's a no-brainer, right?
Yes, definitely.
Carla, that's all we've got time for.
Thank you, Hattie.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your thoughts, your expertise. I really appreciate having you on our show, and I look forward to recording with you again. So thank you very much, Carla.
Thank you, Hattie. Goodbye.
What I'll say to our listeners is, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcast, and you can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.
Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com.